Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Felice C. Frankel, an award-winning science photographer. And we're talking about her newest book, Picturing Science and Engineering. Hey, Felice, how are you doing?
Hey, Mark. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for getting me on air.
Oh, man. I was sort of taken aback at how gorgeous this book is.
It was wonderful.
I knew it was going to be good. I didn't realize it was going to be museum quality imagery that I just fell in love with. And then there's all the technical part. And that's the thing that's amazing to me about Picturing Science and Engineering. It's a beautiful book that, and I think anybody would enjoy the imagery, but it's also a how-to manual for aspiring science and engineering photographers. And this is 25 years of work that you put into this book.
Yeah, it's 25 years. That's how long I've been doing this stuff. And I'm on a mission.
I got that from reading it.
Good. I love science. I want the world to love science. And I think one of the biggest issues is that people are intimidated by it. They're afraid to ask questions because they don't think they're smart enough to understand. I am firmly convinced that if researchers would pay more attention on how they communicate their work, and specifically in their image making or graphics, it can start attracting people to ask questions. That's really why I wrote the book. Yes, of course I want people to love photography as well, and I hope that happens at the same time. But in the end, it ultimately is about engaging the non-expert into looking and seeing, and more important, to ask questions. And when people can do that when they look at pictures.
It's amazing. The more I read this book, the more visual tropes that have been overdone in visually communicating information in science that I became aware of.
Really?
Yeah, and you point them all out. I mean, by saying, well, why don't you put it this way and instead of that way? Just because it's been done before, that doesn't mean that's the way it should be done ad infinitum.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's trying to push the photographer to just make something more than good enough. It's about getting it to a level where people will become engaged. So, yeah, I have a whole thing about why are you perpetuating ugly?
Or boring, or worse, boring.
Yeah, it's and we've seen it before, and so when you see it again, you don't bother looking. You see, this is about getting people to look
specifically
at science. I mean, that's the point. Of course, we could translate this to other areas as well. But my soul is in science and in engineering.
Well, I also think we're in a crisis here in the United States about people getting engaged with science.
And the
more that we can get people involved. But this is also about the scientists themselves, about the way they look at their information and how they're communicating it. And is there a better, more interesting way, let me put it that way, to communicate the information visually? A visual image can really set a person off and take them on a trip. And this is what this book is about. The funny thing is, and I loved reading this, is how you get started down this road. And as you write in your book, you started it as a whim.
Yeah.
You got to explain that.
Well, if we want to go all the way back, even before my introduction, I was just a photographer as an avocation. My husband bought me a Nikon camera, and actually that's not trivial.
Oh.
He was in Vietnam at the time, actually during the Tet Offensive. Ooh. And many of your viewers don't know what that is, probably.
I do.
Okay, we're that old, yeah. And using very fine equipment was not trivial. That really sort of, and I encourage your listeners to consider this, to work with the finest equipment you can, kind of gets you the pictures that you want to get. And, you know, the lenses are still wonderful. And I gather Canon is just as good too. But I started with an Nikon, started just playing around, and I was working in a laboratory. That's what I did after college. I didn't go on to graduate school. My undergraduate work was in biology and chemistry. So there's a science background, which, by the way, is not trivial, because that allows me to have interesting conversations with researchers. And so one day, I was hanging around WGBY, which is a station, PBS station in Springfield, Massachusetts. An architect asked me if I could start taking pictures of the renovation of the building. He said, "Have you ever done this before?" I said, "Oh, sure." And of course, never did. I had to borrow his parallax conversion lens, which we don't have to get into. And I seemed to have a knack for that. And I did well. And then he asked me to photograph one of his gardens. We got it published. And voila, I became an architectural and landscape photographer. This is the way, you know, I took advantage of the situation. It turns out that I was good at it. And so I published a number of articles and then eventually published a book called Modern Landscape Architecture with Jory Johnson. He was the writer. Because of that book, I'm pretty sure that was the reason why I was given something called a Loeb Fellowship at the Graduate School of Design. That was the turning point in my career. So I'm here. I was there at Harvard, given this amazing stipend, and said, basically, do what you want to do, which is, you know, the best thing in the world for somebody. I think I was 47 at the time. That's what everybody should try to get. While my colleagues were taking classes at the GSD and Harvard and Kennedy Center, I was living at the Science Center. I desperately missed science. And so I audited as many courses as I could, Stephen Jay Gould, E.O. Wilson, people like that.
Yeah.
And somebody suggested sitting in on another class, and this professor was clearly very visual in how he depicted the information, very, very impressive. And so I went up to him after class, and I, you know, remember, I'm an adult here, and the class was full of freshmen, and I said, you know, I'd really like to see what you're doing in your lab. Do you think I could stop by? And he said, yeah, sure, you know, let's get rid of this woman quickly. And I found his lab, and they just got a paper accepted to Science, and frankly, their pictures were lousy. And I said, you know, let me see what I could do. And cutting to the chase, we got the cover. Now, that in itself was called luck. And most lucky of all is that that scientist was renowned and highly respected, George Whitesides, a chemist at Harvard.
Yeah.
And he said to me, Felice, stay with this. You're doing something that no one else is doing. And that was the beginning. And he opened up doors because he's really one of these tough people who people pay attention to. If he recommends something, they listen. And then something opened up at MIT, at the Edgerton Center. It was just a series of serendipitous events, pure luck. And yes, I was good at it. But life is about timing and luck, and I was damn lucky. And then MIT, little by little, carved out a place for me. That's the beauty of that place. Now, I do not have I don't have any credentials per se, a graduate degree, any of that stuff. They just let you do what you do well. And little by little, the dean of science, Bob Silby, appointed me as a research scientist. And there I have been. And I've had the best time of my life.
I just want to back up a little bit, but to say that you get the cover of Science, which is the AAAS journal here in America, or another Nature would be another great cover to have. That's the equivalent of a photographer getting the cover of the old-time Life magazine.
Yeah, actually, what a nice analogy. Yeah, I agree with you. It's a big deal. Interestingly, I've gotten Nature covers too, and I've been very privileged about all that. I thought when all of the journals went online and people read them digitally, I just assumed that no one was interested in covers anymore.
Oh, no.
because you really can't see the cover. It's like a little thumbnail.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out they still want their covers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you see what happens when you get the cover is that journalists pause at your cover, and they consider writing about it a little more than reading an article in the journal. And so it's a means of distributing the information. And that's what I do. I mean, I am not embarrassed to say that I sell science because science is worth selling.
And the way that you do it is that you developed a visual language while you're photographing architecture and other things. You developed an aesthetic language that you brought over and fit it to science, although you're using sometimes very different equipment, for instance, especially when you're photographing micro. I want to talk about that. But one thing I want to mention for the people who, again, this book is a useful book as well as a beautiful book, which is not two things that often go together. There's a whole list of online resources that go with this book, too. Now, I'm not expecting you to name but people need to know that there's a whole list of online resources to help you out.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, there's a URL in the book where there are articles and actually interviews. I interviewed the art director of Nature, and we about how she selects covers, and we also talk about image enhancement.
Her title was art director, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Just now, making sure that art was in the title.
Oh God! Here we go. You got it. You somehow managed to.
I know. See, there's no way you're going to be able to deny it. This is this is something that's been going on between Felice and I before we went on the air. But there is there's an art director there at Nature.
Yes, you are right. That's what they call it. That is correct.
That's what it is. That's not what they call it.
And you know, Mark, that I still prefer to use the word design.
Yes, I know. We'll talk about that later.
We could talk about that later. Okay.
Now, the thing that was amazing to me about this book, and there's so much to talk about, I want to make sure we jam it all in.
Okay.
You start with making images with flatbed scanners.
Yeah, wild. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really kind of exciting and wonderful. I purposefully started the first
I never would have thought of that.
Yeah. Well, most people don't. Other people have tried it with you know, obviously you scan documents, but with a particular kind of scanner, and they don't have to be incredibly expensive. If you are able to set the resolution of the image, that is how much detail the scanner will pick up, you can get the most stunning images of three-dimensional objects. Absolutely, you lose depth of field around the edges, but, you know, I put pears.
I couldn't believe the images that you got out of it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's crazy, and it's wonderful, and I started the book with that chapter because I want the reader to have fun, because photography is fun. And the more fun you have, the more you'll do it. And the more you do it, the better photographer you become. It's really very straightforward. So yes, I started that with the chapter on flatbed scanner, and I show you very like tomatoes. I mean,
there's an image there of what is called Venus's flower basket.
Correct.
And it's a stunningly beautiful image of an organic object.
Yeah, exactly. And when you zoom in to that image, you could see detail on the micron level. So just to explain that, one of your hairs, if you have any, is about 100 microns across.
Wow.
You could see 50 micron detail in this Euplectella. That's the Venus animal. It's quite remarkable what you could see on the scanner. And I encourage your readers, you know, of course, I love them to get the book, but just plop things on your scanner if, and this is important, if you're able to adjust the resolution. If there's no way to do that, then your scanner is not going to pick up that kind of detail.
Well, this is another element about this book that came out for me, is that you really are encouraging the scientists involved to have fun and experiment with their images, to try different things. One of the great pleasures of this book is you will have images shot different ways in comparison on the same page. Exactly. So you can check out lighting, so you can check out the use of shadows, so you can check out the different image resolutions.
Precisely, yeah.
And all that's in the book, so people can really see what the differences are.
Yeah, and so the reason to nudge people to do this, to change the lighting, is that it's forcing you to see your object.
That's right.
And maybe even see it in a new way. And when you see something in a new way, then you ask questions differently.
There's no doubt in my mind that when I looked at, for instance, when you're lighting objects in different ways, say the crystals, there are certain images that swing, you know, that really are visually engaging. And then there are other images that are not as good. They're serviceable. You could use them.
Yes.
But they're not as good and not as engaging.
Yeah. They're not compelling. They're not getting you to pay attention. And you're right. And I have found in the talks that I've been given that when I show sort of before and after, this is the way you should shot it, and this is the way I shot it.
Right.
It's screaming at you, oh my gosh, I could do that. You know? And by the way, I'm not doing anything that you can't do. That's the point of the whole book as well. I'm not trained in this. This is all about logically approaching the task. And scientists and non-scientists should consider it a task that, by the way, happens to be a lot of fun.
It is fun. It is fun.
Of course it is. There's no question. And if I could just throw this one thing in to make a point, the dirty little secret is that I am learning the science as I am making the image.
Well, that's what I love about this book, too, because there's some really interesting science to learn in this book.
Good.
I know.
Good.
There were things that I had to look up, which were great.
I don't concentrate on the science in the body of the book, because I want this to be a book about how to make pictures. But in the back, we have a series of thumbnails of every image taken that I made, and the scientists involved with the research, and the article that is associated with the research. And that's a big chunk of the book, what we're calling the visual index.
Well, for instance, when you're trying to shoot a process, in other words, not just a single image, but a process of many images, one of the examples you use is, why not use a grid? In other words, why not show the process as it works along in a single picture? And you take the picture of, I'm going to mispronounce this, the Belousov-Zebedinsky reaction?
Close enough.
Zebedinsky reaction. And I had to look that up. And then when I learned about what it was and then saw the visual image, what a perfect way to represent that.
Oh, good.
Represent that reaction.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that, because it is a dynamic reaction. Something happens over time.
And it's beautiful.
And it is beautiful. And so, yes, of course, we want to see film of things that happen over time. Actually, everything happens over time. And we're taken with films and animation. But a film is a series of still images. And people don't, you know, think of it that way. So what I did was I made a series of still images that were taken 11 seconds apart. And when you juxtapose them next to each other, you can actually see more. You can study exactly what happens from one moment to the other.
I love it.
That was taken quite a while ago. And by the way, some of these pictures were taken on film. I spell that F-I-L-M. And that's a whole other story of how we translated it digitally, but right now I do only use a digital camera. That's where my head is at these days.
If there are three words, and you bring this up throughout the book, that are critical to start with when we're looking at creating that picture of your scientific process or idea or thing, it's composition, orientation, and lighting. Can I get you to say a few sentences about each?
Well, the whole idea is that they all work together. if you start composing, if you start lighting your subject, for example, you're going to get shadows, unless you use diffuse light. But let's just say it's direct light, and you're going to start getting shadows, which could emphasize certain structure, which is sometimes good. But those shadows become part of the composition. Because remember, what we're doing when we photograph things is that we are creating three dimensions into a two-dimensional plane. So the shadow itself becomes part of the composition. So that the lighting and the composition and how you approach this particular thing, what angle you're looking at, it's all connected. So it's a complex system in a way. Mm. You can't just take one idea and say, I'm going to compose it this way and disregard the rest of it. You just can't do it. It just doesn't work. So you have to really see it as a somewhat of a triangle where one affects the other. And yes, it sounds complicated, but once you see it and start paying attention to your orientation, your composition, and your shadows or lighting, it makes more sense. And you become better because you see these all as components of making a very good picture.
There are certain sort of field marks of your choices in photography. And one of them, and you talk about this, is instead of shooting one thing, why not shoot pairs?
Yeah, exactly. I just find it easier to compose two of something instead of one. I can't explain it.
People need to see the book.
You have to see it, yeah. But by the way, not only is it easier to make the picture, but it also shows that you have the ability to create more than one of these things. That's not trivial. People have to know that you have control of something.
But it's visually interesting, too, because, say you have some kind of flat piece of computer ware, you show just oriented like most people would 90 degrees, like a block in the center of the frame. It's boring. Put them askew and then part of one and part of another, and it becomes visually interesting and intriguing.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm glad you agree on that. Yeah, I mean, I think so too. And I didn't get this from a book or anything. It happened as I was playing around. That's the point of this, that it's an act of discovery. The photographic process should be an act of discovery. I really don't know what the images are going to look like until I start playing with it. And once again, I'm trying to nudge the researcher and the non-researcher to play and not go in with a stringent notion of what the picture should be. They should allow the picture making to speak to you as you are processing it.
We're going to run out of time here, and I knew we were going to do that and have so many more pages of questions. But one of the things that I found fascinating is that when you travel, you don't carry your camera equipment with you.
No, I don't.
I'm sure a lot of people are going, what?
What? Yeah, well, I think a lot has to do with my age. Because
nobody wants to lug that shit around.
No, that's, yeah, and I used to do it. I can't believe I used to lug all that stuff by myself without an assistant around the country when I was photographing architecture and landscape architecture for various firms. And I just don't have the energy anymore. And the other thing is, I don't see my travel pictures as serious, let's say, as the pictures that I do professionally.
But there is a chapter in this book about photographing things with your phone.
Yes, and I will tell you, the book is based on a course that I gave on edX, one of the MOOCs that you could find all over the world. And in that edX course, I basically said, you just cannot be serious about making wonderful pictures on your phone. This was about 4 years ago. And oh boy, have I changed my mind.
Well, the cameras on the phones have gotten much better.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And every part of it is, it just makes sense. But there are limitations. For example, the file size,
right,
which is about the information that you have, that it's not quite there yet. So I could never get a cover of a journal with a phone image, for example, because it's just, the information is just not there. But it's going to happen. No question. And I'm sure the Apple and all the rest have the cameras in the backyard ready to be sold with higher resolution. I'm sure it's going to happen.
There's some photographs of some meals that you've had in this book, which, yes, is, you've had some pretty incredible meals, man.
Yeah, well,
these are not the usual burger and fries that everybody puts down. These are like extremely designed meals.
Yeah.
I would say aesthetically, artistically designed meals that you've taken photographs of.
Yeah. Well, I'm a kind of a foodie, and
I guess so.
I'm trying to, again, it's just an exercise for the photographer to think about composition in a limited moment, because, you know, first of all, I tell you, do not use your flash, you know.
Oh, you have rules. You have rules in this book for taking photographs of your food.
Oh, yes, I absolutely do, because I think it's insulting to the rest of the people in the restaurant to see flashes going off. And you could do it, and you could actually make better pictures without your flash.
Well, Felice, we're completely out of time.
Okay. Oh, goodness.
I'll have to have you back at another time.
It would be fun. Mark, this has been joyful. Thank you.
Oh, man, it's been great. But there's so much more to talk about just about this book. So I'm going to plan on having you back. My guest tonight has been Felice C. Frankel, award-winning science photographer. And we've been talking about her newest book, which is a stunning book, Picturing Science and Engineering. And I don't say that lightly. This is a book you'll pick up and you'll sort of be sucked in by the imagery, but there is a tremendous amount of practical photography information in this book as well. And so it'll get you, as Felice has said time and again through this interview, it'll get you to see things differently. Felice, it's been a pleasure.
For me as well.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.